This is Exploring the Marketplace Podcast. I'm Sean Bowles.
And I'm Bob Hassan. And together, we're inviting you into conversation about what God is doing with entrepreneurs, influencers, and everyday career fields.
Get a fresh perspective with our commentary and stay for the main chorus from our handpicked guests who are vulnerable, transparent, and sharing how their faith affects their career in powerful ways.
If a picture's worth a thousand words, then their life story is worth a thousand sermons. Here we go. Welcome to Exploring the Marketplace. I'm Bob Hassan with my friend Sean Bowles. Sean, what is going on today?
Well, today on the show, we get to start with real topics where you and I are going to talk about the rhythm of work and rest that some people are trying to achieve through simple work-life balance, which you and I don't necessarily believe in traditional work-life balance, but there's more to it than just that. So I'm glad we're going to talk about this. Then our guest comes from a corporate background and also a ministry background. After 18 years of ministry, he found himself going to the corporate world, and then he ended up directing missions organization after severe burnout, which is really cool. So how do we go from burnout to helping kids at risk and all these things that he's doing? He's going to tell us. I think it's perfect in alignment with the subject we're going after today.
Sean, we've got some listener feedback. I know you don't really like hearing about this, but
yeah, we'll right. This is one of my favorite parts. I love to hear what people say about what we're doing because it so affirms the mission we're on.
Yeah. So this feedback is titled Equipped with Love, and it has a 5-star rating.
Yes.
And I have been listening since the podcast began. It's moved me and opened my eyes to see how people are living in the kingdom of heaven in so many ways. It's from Kim in California via Apple Podcasts in the good old US of A. And Kim, thank you so much. And to all of our listeners and viewers, make sure to leave your comments or questions. We love to interact with you on YouTube or our social medias. Sean and I are both really active on Instagram, and we have a new YouTube channel, Exploring the Marketplace. So go visit that.
I know, 4 seasons in, we finally started a YouTube, which I think is just brilliant. And I just can't wait to see how it changes and shapes our community that's around the show. So make sure to join us because it's only as strong as you guys talking to us there. And we can't wait to see you on YouTube. Well, Bob, I have the real topic today, and it's with the crisis in the workforce of people feeling overworked and anxious and overwhelmed. Many Christians are turning to the Bible to define a work-life balance and to look at what God intended for us when he told us to rest or to take a Sabbath. But according to the Theology of Work website, it's a great website. I don't know if you've been there, but human beings need a rhythm of work and rest in order to live up their God-given potential. Just as God gives important work to do, God also gives people rest periodically from their labor. And if rest is the source of refreshment and means a better relationship with God and to ourselves, with other people, why don't we do it? Well, this is the question that they were asking there. And you and I get asked the question, we probably had it maybe 4 times a year in the last few years that we've been doing the show, is what? How do I define my work-life balance? And instead of that question, it should be, how do I enter into the biblical rhythm of rest and work that God intended? Because both are from God.
Exactly. Well, I love this old scripture. Well, I guess all scriptures are old, but the scripture that I've known for a long time, Matthew 11, 28 through 30, let me read it to you. Come to me, all you who are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So how do we live that, Sean? And whenever we talk about work-life balance and rhythm of rest, I always think of sports teams. Because let's say in the NFL, there's this 8-month season, and if you make it all the way to the end to the Super Bowl, you've had this huge long season, and the second the Super Bowl is over, you are resting.
Yeah,
because you've had this long season. And it's that way for any sports team. Whatever the season is, at the end, you rest. Well, for most of us, we're not on sports teams, and we enter into this daily life. And so in a 24-hour day, we sleep 8 hours a day, we work roughly 8 hours a day, and then we have roughly 8 hours of free time. And so what do we do with that free time? Do we pursue our passions? Do we enter into rest?
Yeah, then you got on top of that children and family and everything too.
Well, yeah, those. Well, mine are all out of the house, so
yeah. But it's still like it's a little part-time job for every person you have in your life. It's just part of, you know, it's as far as the hours it takes to be in a relationship, not that they're a job, but you know what I mean? It's just, it adds responsibility and time.
And so when we talk about the Sabbath, you know, God worked 6 days and rested on the seventh. And I think there's something in that that we have to add into our rhythm. When I grew up, nothing was open on Sundays. No stores, no nothing. Sports didn't happen on Sundays. It was just the day of rest. And as we've evolved as a society, we are a 24-hour, seven-day-a-week society now. So resting isn't part of what God's economy is. There's rest after the sixth day. In the world's economy, there really isn't any rest because now we're connected by our mobile devices and everything else. And so the question becomes, how disciplined do you have to be to rest?
Yeah. Oh, it's such a great, you know, it's funny because when I would go to Europe and I have European friends, especially my friends in the UK, they like for their summer breaks, they take off like 5 weeks from work. And we get like a week a year in most corporate jobs, maybe 2 weeks a year for vacation. And then as far as like in a row, like you could actually take off because otherwise you're a liability to your workplace. I mean, there's all these things that are there. A lot of entrepreneurs don't take off any time. They might take off like a weekend, but they're on their phone the whole time, their devices. So to have that kind of modeled, I was like going, that's ridiculous. I can't believe they would take off so much time. And when I was young, I used to judge it like, that's ridiculous. And now that I'm older, I'm like, how do I do that? Like, how do I actually take off real time and more time? And it's been a struggle. Sheree and I are both workers and we really enjoy work. So as a married couple, like we have to literally focus and put boundaries up around rest and being. And that's been something that I probably need some more therapy sessions on, but we have a pretty good balance. Sheree's way better than I am, but we have a pretty good balance as far as how, especially since we moved to Texas, we were like, okay, we're in a new social circle. Let's not fill up our calendar. Let's partially fill it up, but it fills up by itself so easily. Let's change the way that we even do what we do because we don't have a 20-year history here like we did in LA. And so it's really interesting, but I know people are struggling with this who are listening, Bob. I know that there's people who are like, I don't rest or I haven't had a break or I haven't given myself permission to have a hobby or I haven't given myself permission to take a day off. Like, what would you say to them?
Well, I love what you said about, you know, permission to rest. And then rest doesn't mean laying down on the couch. I mean, it could be a hobby. One of the ways that I like to rest is to exercise.
Yeah.
And it clears my head because what we're talking about is trying to clear our head from all this noise that's all around us and try to find the Father heart of God. And I love what Darren Shear has done in his Theology of Work. He's written a book.
Yeah, it's a great
book. Theology of Work, his website just has all kinds of really great tools for, you know, learning, especially this article, learning how to rest. And I think we have to be disciplined about figuring out how to rest.
Yeah. You're going to get into burnout. You're going to get into anxiety. You're going to get into, you don't have the capacity, the reservoir to deal with a big problem or a big crisis because you've given all your energy. So if you don't get any back, then those times you need energy to celebrate and go to a wedding or the times you need to deal with controversy that's happening, you have no reservoir. And I think that that's the thing is like we get anchors through rest that we wouldn't have without rest. And I've learned that, but I'm on the weekend of the learning process. I'm learning after this half a century.
I think it's a lifelong time. You reorganize, these next 3 months are going to be crazy busy. And so if God's given you the next 3 months to be crazy busy, then you do it. And you try to take Sabbath during those times, during those weeks. And then at the end of the 3 months, you give yourself permission to take a break. Like,
yes, it's been really rebalance. If you want 100%, go 40% for a while. I agree. You know, just change the way. And I think that that's a bit, well, the article that they wrote, they also said rest, this is a direct quote, rest is intended to remind people of the privilege of being created in God's image. The hollowness of the seventh day is God's gracious invitation to enjoy intimate communion with him and delight in his creation. Yet because of humanity's sin and the fall, work, which God originally created as good, now becomes painful and frustrating. So I feel like that's, if you're frustrated and rest, it's showing that you're not connecting to God. Like, I think ultimately that's what it is like, I don't rest because there's a disconnect. And if I really, really look at all I've been doing as God given, that God's given me the responsibility, God's partnering to me, then I'll want to take those times of rest to watch him work. And I think I said it on a past episode that I went to a church here locally and the pastor said that she'd never rested, and her and her husband. And then the Lord said, you're not giving me opportunity to work for you on the seventh day and show you how much more work I can do for you than you could do on your own. And I thought that was super interesting as well.
Yeah. It's, you know, it, practically speaking, you know, we all don't know when we're getting close to burnout. But one of the ways over all these decades that I've learned is that when I start getting, when I realize I'm mad at everyone,
we all know Toasty Bob.
Yeah, like how could I be mad at Sean? But I'm mad at Sean. How could I know? Of course, you're mad at your wife, or your wife's mad at you. But when you start looking at every relationship in your life, and you recognize you're mad at them, you know, usually, you know, it's you. And that's how I realize, oh my gosh, I am out of balance, and I need to cut some things back, because everybody out there can't be wrong. It has to be me. And at 99% of the time it is. And when you don't have good balance, when you haven't had rest, you don't have the capacity to emotionally engage in either good things, like you said, like a wedding, or controversies, or things that you really, really need to be able to focus on in order to give your best, in order to help these situations. So I think it sneaks up on us, and we just have to have little cues to be aware when we get to this place in our life.
This is so good, Bob. I think this is one of my favorite conversations we've had, because I think that a lot of people are there in a time when there's crisis in our nation, in a time when there's economics are not strong, in a time where there's a lot of push. People have had a push for a long time after the coronavirus, after a lot of people are in transition. We still got to be reminded to rest. And so thanks for even your perspective on that, because it helped me. Well, we have a question of the week. Tell us the question of the week.
I'm going to read it to you. All right. This is from the bullsministries.com website, where you can go and ask us a question. Here it is. How can I best steward the waiting season before breakthrough, when carrying a lot of prophetic words that seemingly are delayed in coming to fruition? What's the right balance between letting go of outcomes and staying attentive to what God has promised? Now, I don't know anybody. Maybe I do know somebody who wrote a book on breakthrough. Do you think you could answer that, Sean?
Just one part. No, you know, two people, because Rabbi Jason Sobel did too, our friend Rabbi. I love this question, Bob, and I didn't know this was a question today. I think it's such a great perspective. Or I love to get this perspective. I'm telling you, my perspective is great. I think it is because I've lived through something, not because I'm wise. But I feel like when we're pursuing the call of God and the things that God's promised us, there's no passive waiting. There's no like, one day God will do it. Whether it's something about marriage, whether it's something about ourselves changing and growing, whether it's an actual purpose in an industry or with a people group, whether it's about finances, that something inside of us has to always, like Mary, treasure and let that word of the Lord work inside of us, like ponder it. And so for me, like I knew I was supposed to go to LA when I was 15 years old, I started getting those words, but I didn't go to LA. So I was in 1988, 87, around there. I didn't go to LA until 2006. That's when I felt called to go. That was a long time. And so during that time, I would go to things and places that reminded me of the call of God I would have in LA, and also the further call that I'm having here, which is over media and entertainment. And so I would go out and sew a trip into my, you know, into my dream and my journey. Every year I would go to LA as much as I could. Every once in a while I'd miss. Sometimes I go twice a year, sometimes it was only once a year. And I would go on what I call my spiritual journey, like almost like a pilgrimage, and go to places that I felt were significant to feed that dream of God in my life. Yeah, and so I'd serve at the Dream Center, or I would do things at churches, or I would go to a TV shooting, or I'd go be an extra in a movie or whatever. I would do all those things that I could that were like that, being around the atmosphere, but I couldn't predict what my actual calling would be until I got there. And so I think like a lot of people, they think I'm waiting on God, and it means they're doing zero. there's, I know writers who are like, I'm going to write the most epic book that's going to change this generation. I'm like, what are you writing now? Nothing. I'm like, no, you're not. Because God's not going to let you bury a talent and then sit on it and then give you more. He's saying, like, if you died today, did you do anything? Did you sow into the dream with him so that somebody else inherits the equity of that? Even if you're dead, somebody prayed and lived in and cried, you know, tears and paid a blood price even sometimes over these industries and these things, these dreams of God. I think when we do that, it takes us out of, because passivity is such a thief. It takes us out of a boring waiting mode and puts us in an active waiting mode where we're looking for it. We're looking for, like, the promise. We're looking for how to partner to God. And I partnered to God so many times before. It wasn't full time. It was a part time, but so many times before I ever came out to LA, which began a trajectory. And then when I got to LA, I didn't really start what I was called to in LA until about 2018. So even after, from 2006 to 2018, I pastored a church, I did itinerant ministry, but I didn't really start until 2018. So, I mean, it's not like I've had a slow burn. I haven't had a quick release. So I hope that helps, you know, someone understand maybe your process.
Yeah. I think, you know, I look at the question and they write the prophetic words that are seemingly delayed and coming to fruition. And I always think about God's timing and not our timing. You know, and in my life, there's been, you know, a 45-year career where there's been steps taken every year and that didn't seem significant, but they were. And I think waiting on God's timing is huge. If we were awarded the jobs today that we are doing today, even 10 years ago, we wouldn't have been able to do them.
Wow, that's so good.
And so I think the right balance between letting go of outcomes and staying attentive to God is always stay attentive to God and continue to put the outcome and the dream on the altar with him in order to find that whatever his timing is. And it is a fine line, and it's sometimes very frustrating because you feel like I'm not making enough progress or the progress that I think I should. And this is a deep question on so many levels. I love the way you answered it, Sean.
I like your answer too. That was so good.
Well, it's time for our main course, and we have an incredible guest today. Do you want to tell us about him?
Yeah, Michael Aker. His parents became committed followers of Christ when they left behind drug smuggling and also witchcraft to lead a life dedicated to service through YWAM. That's a pretty intense introduction.
Yeah.
And full-time work in Mexico. Their dedication marked Michael's life and helped set him on a path towards ministry. And after college, after nearly 20 years of pastoral ministry, Michael ventured into corporate sales and executive communication coaching while still volunteering at GO, which is the mission he's involved with, for a season and at his local church. In 2023, Michael and Taylor began a conversation with the leadership board of GO on a Mission, ultimately becoming executive directors at GO on a Mission, committing to aiding impoverished children and breaking the cycle of poverty. I'm so excited to hear about Michael today. I want to ask him about some of the parts of the journey where he had some burnout and some transitions, because I think a lot of us who are listening and looking at these kinds of interviews, we want to milk out those moments of, like, how did you walk with God there? So up next is Michael. Are you ready to take your spiritual growth journey even more seriously, all while being involved in an active and engaged community online? Well, we have classes, activation groups, online Discord community, and a 12-month spiritual growth discipleship accelerator that I get to lead. They're going to help you embrace subjects like hearing God's voice, being empowered every day by the real gifts of the Holy Spirit, and developing your spiritual disciplines in a way that's both practical and very practiced. And I've invited expert ministers and all kinds of subjects alongside myself to teach you for 4 weeks classes each month. And if the subject that they're teaching each month isn't effective or is not relevant to the phase of your spiritual growth, we also take past classes and have our pastoral team facilitate totally different subjects for 4 weeks, so you have multiple class options on subjects that matter to you. I can't wait to spend 2 accelerator hours a month with you as I get to activate you, pour into you, and mentor you in practicing hearing God's voice. By the end of these 12 months together, I know you're going to have confidence in your own ability to trust God and yourself and actively speak to you. Come join us at Spiritual Growth Academy. It's going to be one of the greatest decisions you've ever made.
Well, welcome back. We're here with Michael Aker. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hey, thanks so much. I'm looking forward to talking with you and really giving some fun stories for the people listening today.
Well, I know that you're leading this organization, this missions organization. You do corporate training, you do a lot of different things, but I'm going to go back into your story of how you got to where you're at now and why you're doing what you're doing now. And you have a very unique origin story that I think we should start with.
Yeah, absolutely. So my dad was a drug dealer, my mom was a witch, and I became a pastor. And I always love talking about that. I get on stages and I'll say that, and people will give me this kind of look like, are you serious? And I'll say, no, I'm serious. And so they met Jesus radically when I was 4 years old. We ended up going down to Mazatlan, Mexico to be missionaries when I was 10. Wow. And then I actually went into law school, was accepted to top law school of Mexico, dropped out, got involved in a church, and I went towards pastoral ministry. And my dad said, having gone through ministry and still being in ministry, he said, Mike, you need a backup plan. And I said, Dad, I have no backup plan. I burnt my boats. I'm all in. I'm going to be a lifelong career pastor.
It's so funny because I feel like that's what we do, right? Like, I feel like that's the model of missions and ministry that most people give, is like, you're either in or you're not. You know, that's it. And your dad's trying to give you practical wisdom, and you're like, no, I'm on. But you did do this for 18 years.
Yeah, 18 years. So I went 18 years all in, became a senior pastor when I was a single 26-year-old man living in north of Seattle, a small little church. I got voted on. Four people stood up and walked out right after the VP said it was almost unanimous. So I'm like, oh, okay. I know who didn't vote for me. And then I did that for 10 years, senior pastor, got married during that time to my wife, Taylor, and then ended up going back into a staff position at a very large church. Lots of great things happening in that church. But after about 1 year, I got to a spot where I would walk around campus and I would think to myself, I don't want to be here. And then I would drive home in California traffic and I would think, I'm not going to do it myself. But if a car hit me and knocked me off the side of the road and I ended up in a coma for 6 months, I'd be okay with that.
What, Michael, what did burnout feel like? I know people throw that word around a lot, but physically, spiritually, emotionally, what were you feeling?
Yeah, there's resentment was a huge part of it. Resentment. I had felt like I was in the thralls of ministry and really just hitting on all cylinders all the way up to this point in time. And actually, I was really doing really well. I was actually running events. I had actually gone to a staff position leading high school, and I would run events where 1,000 teenagers would come. Oh, wow. I would go to the public school, and we did an altar call during lunch at a public school, and we had 1,000 kids during lunchtime at the school come forward.
Oh, that's amazing.
I mean, we're talking about like incredible external results. But inside, I was getting more and more dreary, got to a spot where I stopped reading my Bible. I stopped praying. I was mad. I was resentful. I was bitter. I was tired. I was working 7 days a week. I saw myself as a victim. I didn't know the mentality. I didn't know the word victim mentality at this point in time or victimhood. But I saw myself as a victim of choices of others. And I started creating a narrative in my story and where people were against me, and in my mind, I mean, I was depressed, I was down, I was overworked, I was underpaid. I had to work on the weekends doing weddings to just make extra ends meet, which ended up being a really cool story eventually. But I was doing weddings like 2-3 weekends a week for people I didn't know, just to make that extra cash. Yeah. And it was a hard time in life.
Now, you had a family at that point, I'm assuming, because you got married. And so what was it? What was the feedback from like your wife, or what was there any kind of, what was the intervention, I should say? And was your family a part of that as far as how did God get you out of that place of burnout? How did you choose God out of that burnout?
Yeah. So a couple of things happened. I went to finally start talking to somebody because I was just bottling it all up.
That's awesome.
And I went to go talk to somebody and just said, I don't even know what's happening to me. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what's going on. And just someone safe that I felt like I could talk to. And I didn't know where. So I would drive an hour away outside of the city so that me as a pastor could feel safe talking to somebody. Because I was really relatively well known in the area. And even though I'd only been there for a year. And I mean, that was difficult. So that was helpful. And then we put a fleece before the Lord, whether to stay or to leave. And when that wasn't met, I resigned. And that began a 3-month process of looking for a different place. I always tell people, never, ever go into ministry for a paycheck. Like, one, there's jobs that pay much better. Yeah. Two, it shouldn't be a job. It should be a calling that if you're full time, you get paid for it. Great. But I had no backup plan. I burned all my bridges. Yeah. So I didn't know what to do. And I'm looking around. I'm 38 years old. I'd done really well in ministry. I was too tired for ministry. And I actually applied for one job. And they said, hey, you're amazing. It seems like you might be a little bit depressed.
Oh, wow.
And I said, you're right. And that was like, oh, man. So I'm at this barbecue with some friends just talking about this process. And one of my friends, not a Christian guy, he goes, I'd hire you in a heartbeat. I said, what do you do? He goes, veterinary distribution. I said, what is that? He goes, well, you know, veterinarians, they need stuff. We distribute it to them. I said, oh, okay. And so I got on the call with a recruiter who had already talked to hundreds of people in a very desirable niche of sales. And the recruiter talks to me for an hour. She gets off the call. She calls the guy who later on hired me. And she said, this guy has no experience in sales. He has no education that's relatable to the field of veterinary medicine, but he's your best candidate you have.
Wow.
Yeah. So God set me up. It was a cool setup. There's more stories of that, of course. But I started the job, got paid more than I'd ever been paid before in ministry. And the perks and stuff. And dove all into this new reality at around 39 years old.
Wow. That must have been really wild. I just want to ask this question because it must have been really wild to go from like ministry where some of the needs weren't being met into your just being a man, just like providing for your family, just accumulating all those kinds of things that you were obviously, and then there was the burnout, anxiety stuff. And then to go into like something that felt like handpicked for you for that season that just brought a lot of significance to those areas. Like, what was that like? Did it feel like you were able to overcome like those symptoms or that kind of the residue of burnout really quickly? Or did it feel like that was still a process?
Yeah, I actually overcame the burnout really quickly in this whole process. And obviously there's more to that whole story, but I overcame that. But for the first time ever, I also understood what it meant to be hurt by the church. And I never felt like that before. In fact, just this last Sunday at the church, we attend City Hope Church in Daphne, Alabama, pretty large church. The pastor
asked I love City Hope Church. I've randomly visited there when I lived in Daphne for like a year, well, right outside of Daphne for a year, randomly.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Church. Yeah. Well, so Pastor Trey and I actually became friends when I was a pastor. I was on vacation. He was on vacation. We met outside of the area, talked, connected, stayed in contact for years. And then when we ended up moving, which is later in the story, we moved down the street from City Hope.
That's awesome.
So it was providential in that aspect too. But when I jumped into sales, a couple things happened at the same time. I also wrote a book and I had been coaching on the side. Remember those weddings that I was doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let me just pause right here. If you're looking at going into entrepreneurial space or a business space, there's two ways to go at it, and there's not necessarily a right or wrong way to do it. Some master plan their business. They sit down, they go, we're going to do X, Y, Z, and this is how we're going to do it. We're going to have a master plan. We're going to get some funding, et cetera. Other people, they take one step at a time into it. And so for me, it was one step at a time. The wedding gigs turned into life coaching for $40, turned into communication coaching for $60, turned into communication coaching for $90, turned into a request to write down some of my thoughts, turned into a book, which became an international bestseller, translated 10 different languages, sold 50,000 copies, on and on and on, and launched my career. So I'm in sales. I'm doing well. I took an $800,000 territory and turned it into $4 million the first year. I'm hitting the road. I'm out there. I'm feeling the wins. My boss, instead of saying negative things, my boss would say stuff like, he said, I don't know if that will work, but why don't you give it a try? It's like, all right, cool. Yeah. So he's just writing blank checks for me just to try things out. And it was working. We were having a fun. COVID hits. Yeah. And we are grounded. We can't go out and do sales. So I leaned into the coaching. The coaching took off. Even though sales resumed, my coaching was now a full-time job, and we made the switch and moved to near my wife's family gave up the secure coaching job to try entrepreneurship. I started my brand new job as a solopreneur right on the day I turned 40 years old.
Nice.
So it seems like transition isn't kryptonite for you. It sounds like you have been able to embrace it to a point where, even though it's uncomfortable, you're moving into these new situations.
Yeah, maybe I made that sound too good.
Well, I mean, obviously behind the scenes, there is a lot of stress, but there's lots of people, our listeners and viewers, who are in transition right now. And I would assume they're wondering, you know, what was it like? What were sleepless nights, or did you and your wife, you know, were you really, really together on this?
Yeah, there were times we were and times we were not.
Yeah.
And that was definitely a difficult point in it. Mm. I realized that my stress coping mechanisms had disappeared ever since I left my senior pastoring jobs. So my stress coping mechanisms as a senior pastor in an area that I was well loved and had great community were friendships and prayer. And I'd get together and we'd just like, oh man, I'm going through this kind of thing or this happening. We went through infertility for years. And so we would lean on this massive support system that I'd built for 20 years. And when we moved, I didn't have that, which is why I found myself driving down the road. And I didn't actually want to go back because my pride kept me away from saying, man, that was a bad decision. I can't believe I made that decision.
That's a huge thought right there. Reflection.
It is. Well, and then I, even though I will return to my home state in Washington after being in California, I was in sales. And so a lot of people couldn't really relate with me the same way and externally. So even the stressors in one of the things I felt in that moment was these people that some of these pastoral networks that I'd built relationships with for years, no one called me. Mm-hmm. And no one said, hey, you're in sales. Why are you in sales? No one, and I felt like, I mean, the organization that I was part of and was like a tithing member and all those kind of things and been in leadership and not the church I pastored, they were actually quite gracious and still are. A friend took over that church after I left, and he's still in contact. We were emailing today, and I love what he's doing in the church. But I was like, so when I was able to help you out, you called on me. But when I needed your help,
right,
I wasn't part of your network. So
yeah, it's so rough. And I know a lot of people can relate to that completely, just because a lot, it's a school syndrome. Like in the way we do our colleges is you're friends with people while you're doing purpose with them. But as soon as you leave, you never talk to them again. I've just read an article that the average person only retains one friendship from college. And that's some of the most formative years of your life where you're experiencing so much. And then all of a sudden you're not even like really there. There's not a community centricness to it. And I feel like a lot of churches have that feel of like, as long as we do something together, we have relationship. But the moment we don't do something together, or if you leave, we don't have, it breaks that relationship cycle. And I think God is going to heal that for a lot of people. But I love in your story that, you know, you ended up taking on this coaching business and then you ended up getting grounded in this church you're in now. Talk about that transition in COVID, and like you all of a sudden start coaching. And then there's another transition that comes even after that we get to hear about. It just seems like a lot of change. Like it seems like God groomed you for some things that took a lot of maybe hard transitions at times for it. But talk about the transition you went into when you now live, it sounds like, in Daphne, Alabama.
Yeah, I do. So we move and we just all go all in. And my wife said, like, look, I believe in you. Go for it. we'll see if you could do this. At this point in time, I don't have enough paying clients to pay a wage, right? So I jump in and I got one great paying client and I'm throwing some mud at the wall to see what sticks. And on the seventh day of my entrepreneur career, hurricane comes through and closes things down, closes electricity. I have to cancel everything I'm doing that week. Family moves into our house. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is awful.
Oh my god.
And then what, 3 months later, my big client quits because he's going through stuff because of COVID. But I just kept in there, tried stuff, worked stuff. And on the third year of doing it, I made more money than I'd ever made in my life. And honestly, I didn't even quite know what to do about it. I wasn't prepared to make that much money. I'm like, I'm getting checks for the different things that I'm speaking at and different organizations I'm working with. And they're coming in the mail. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. I've never received this kind of money before. And I'm looking at my life and I'm on a vacation. And we're doing like the VIP tour at Legoland with our six-year-old son. We're staying right on premise right there. You know, it's all, everything's amazing. I get a call. I land a publishing contract while I'm at Legoland with my son for his birthday. I mean, that was that year. And when that book gets published and released, I looked back and this is a year ago and I thought, that was really cool. But there's got to be more. And I looked at it and I thought, I mean, that's fun. I mean, we're going to church. I'm leading kids ministry every other week. And, you know, I'm doing this and that, but there's gotta be something more. And I looked at it and I said, you know, some people work for money. And I think that's great. If you want to know the funniest realization that I learned in going from pastoral ministry into the corporate workspace, I never understood. I knew, but I didn't understand that people worked for money.
Mm.
I told that to my boss and he laughed so hard. Because in ministry, you don't work for money.
Yeah, you're not money motivated. You're not money centered.
So after this year where I made all this money and did all these things, it was like, cool. But that's not what motivates me. And so I had been on the board of Go On The Mission, which is just goonthemission.com. I'd been on the board there many years ago when I was a pastor. And I thought to myself, you know what would be great? I would love to work for, I don't want to go back to pastoral ministry. I feel like I closed the door on that season. It was a fantastic season. I ended in some hardship, but I've restored, redeemed that, redeemed relationships, all that kind of stuff. Cool, good. I'd like to do something ministry, but now I've learned so much about the corporate world and structure and all this kind of stuff. And I would love to merge these two. You know what would be great is to do something like Go On The Mission. Something where I could be like a spokesperson or executive director for an organization. That would be great. Now, I wish I had written down that prayer. Everybody write down your prayers. Just 2 months later, I get a call and says, hey, our executive director just retired. Do you want to apply to become the next executive director?
Wow.
To which I said, no. I said, yes, I did.
That's amazing. Wow.
Talk to us about Go On The Mission. What's the mandate? What are you doing? How has it changed your life along with everyone else's lives?
Right. So there's a cycle of poverty that a large percentage of the world is caught up in and they can't get out. Now, we have it in the United States too, but it is different than some of these other countries. Yeah. Like if you compare poverty here, which is real and is honest, I mean, it's legit. But you compare that to poverty elsewhere in a place like Burkina Faso. There's hope here and you can find resources here more readily than there. And it's systemic. And so a lot of times we look at that global poverty, we just go, there's just no way out. And systemically, there's so many things that has to happen for it to change that it's so hard and it's easy just honestly to ignore because it's so far out of there. So at Go On The Mission, here's our goal. We want to help children. We want to equip children. So not just to do it for them, because we're not God. We're not saviors. We want to equip, because that is what the church is called to do, to equip saints for ministry. So we want to equip these young saints with a chance to break the cycle of poverty. Mm. And there's three proven pathways to do it. You have to have nourishment. If you don't have food, you can't get educated because you have no food. You won't even Absolutely. Go to school. So you need nourishment first, basic health care, food, water. The second one is education. You got to know what you don't know. General education or vocational training or financial management skills. Those are the three aspects of skills. And the last one is hope. Because if you don't have hope that you can, you won't even do these others. And you'll give up. So what we do is that we partner with organizations in country, and we have a Go liaison, a Go employee in each of our major continents. So we have one in Latin America, we have one in Africa. And then we actually don't run the programs ourselves. We just work with them, collaborate with them, partner with them, listen to them, respond to them, listen to them some more, respond some more, build relationships, stay in relationship, continue relationship, build relationship, and work with them. They're nationals. It's their culture. It's their people.
Yeah.
God has gifted them. We're not white saviors. And we go in there and we partner and we listen, and then we come alongside them. And so we equip the kids to break the cycle of poverty by providing those three pillars through a three-prong approach. So we go and do projects as needed. So whether that's a school and we're talking to a partner, and so we build the school, we organize the school, we orchestrate the school. And then once it's up, all up and running, we just hand it over because we don't want to hold on to that. That's not our assets. Let's make that a kingdom asset. So this isn't about building our little mini kingdom and say, wow, look at all the assets we have. So it's in their hands. It's their property. It's theirs.
That's awesome.
Then we do two trips, and these are life-giving trips. You know, I once asked someone, I said, do you want trips to come? They said, absolutely. They give us hope. We're not alone. In Senegal, where we are just thriving with our partners there, 95% of the population is Muslim. And so if you're a Christian, you're less than 5%. And if you're like a devoted Christian, you're less than 3%. So you feel very isolated. So you have Christians come, and these people love Jesus.
Yeah.
They're like, oh my gosh, we're not alone. There's people around the world who are like us. And then the third one is what we do, child sponsorship. And it's absolutely amazing. For $1.30 a day, the amazing change that you can have to provide all three pillars. And it's not like, you're giving it to them, because there is a $1.30 plus their work. So like, for example, Jimena, she's sponsored to go through a school in Puebla outside of Mazatlan or outside of Mexico City. And Dr. Brian, actually a client of mine, is sponsoring her. But he's not paying the way. He's just coming along, starting partnering, because her mom's working and her brother's working and the school is helping her. Mm. And then we provide the rest. And so it's amazing how what's impossible with $1.30 a day becomes possible through partnership.
How do our listeners and viewers help and understand your mission and eventually sponsor children?
Yeah, absolutely love it. So we have a website, and we will be rebranding in the summer even more, but it's gooonthemission.com. So just gooonthemission.com. People can look at my website, michaelacker.com. You can see my corporate work as well if you go to mikeacker.com. michaelacker.com is this aspect. I wrote a book on helping people find their mission. I'm all about living by mission. Even in all these different changes, I've had a mission that has guided and that I've had to tweak as I go. So I wrote a mission book. You can get it for free by going to book.michaelacker.com, or you can buy it on Amazon if you want to give me money.
So amazing. We're so glad you were on today. Thanks for sharing just all the transitions and the way that you just watch God weave in and out of your life, and just for your dedication to especially these kids at risk. That's just so beautiful. And I know that that's an issue that touches both Bob and my heart. So it's just so awesome to meet a new organization that's doing such a good job at it. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And if I were to say one last word for people, just to encourage you, just know this, that where you are is not where you have to stay. Mm-hmm. So you're discouraged. You're driving down the road right now and you're feeling like pulling over and just letting the car just roll and crash. Like, where you are is not where you have to stay, that you can go from that place of despair to a place of hope. Or if you feel like, hey, great, I'm thriving, but what am I doing with this? That where you are is not where you have to stay, that you can go in and provide hope for other people through a small amount or through large amounts. Some people give quite generously to make this happen. So where you are, no matter where you are,
yeah,
it's not where you have to stay.
That's awesome. Well, you heard it here, and I hope that you guys, as you're viewing this, we just want to hear from you about how this impacts you. So make sure to go to bowlsministries.com or go to our YouTube page and go to Exploring the Marketplace. You'll see Bob and I on there, and leave a comment under this video and tell us what you're thinking about Michael and his story. And Michael, thank you so much again for being with us. We hope to have you on again.
Hey, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to Exploring the Marketplace, where we have weekly episodes to keep your work and life full of courage and hope. If you enjoyed our question of the week, come and be a part of by asking your question at bowlsministries.com or in the comments, where we might include it in a future episode.
Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and be a part of the conversation by following us on our Exploring the Marketplace YouTube channel or at our socials at Sean Bowles or at Bob Hassel on most social media platforms. Visit us at bowlsministries.com, where you can find our book, Wired to Hear, when you're looking for what God has to say about your career, influence, or entrepreneurship.
We will see you next time. Thanks for joining us.